Okay, now turn back to Dr. Pierce now for the hard stuff. Doctor?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we go back to decision one. That's objective one regarding the ACLs and the AMs. And the question is, the decision that we need to make is, do you agree with the ACL structure described in section 3.2.3.2 and depicted in figure one? And I would turn to Deirdre to provide any necessary elaboration.
Thank you. There's also just a few slides related to the ACL information that I'll be going through in this presentation. If you want to go along with me, I'm flipping back to slide number four. There are roughly a dozen committee motions related to the ACL section of this document. There's a lot on the screen. I realize that we've gone over this a few times. I don't want to belabor it now, but just to highlight a few of the major points or adjustments or changes that are being considered in this amendment compared to the way we manage the fishery now. You know, basically we're bringing everything up to the new definitions and the new acronyms, and different than the groundfish plan, for example. In this fishery, we have an OFL, which is greater than an ABC, but the ABC is set equal to ACL. So keep that in mind, is different in this plan compared to some others that you've approved. But we do use an ACT in this fishery. And the main reason the committee has decided to pursue this strategy would be that there are two pretty distinct fisheries with different management uncertainty. So we wanted to set the target somewhere lower than ACL, but a different buffer for each fishery. So that was the strategy taken. And an ACT would be a way to be a proactive accountability measure by shooting lower than what your limit would be. Just to point out, there is also a Northern Gulf of Maine ACL that is kind of separate from this main flow chart, not to use the word main, but primary flow chart, since that section of the resource is assessed separately and not in the overall assessment. So there is a separate ACL, which before was based primarily on catch history, but we do now, this is the first year through Framework 22, that we'll be able to use a survey-based assessment to help us identify the ACL for the Northern Gulf of Maine fishery, which you'll consider in Framework 22. So just to let you know, the ABC control rule is embedded in this and described throughout the amendment. The SSC has endorsed it and approved it. We've actually been using it for Framework 21, and it's what Dr. Cadron presented earlier today. It's the same method proposed for Framework 22, so we're kind of ahead of the game there that we're already using an ABC control rule for setting what the ABC would be for this fishery. It's based on a 25% chance of exceeding the OFL, so whatever catch rate associated with that fishing level would be. Another major change that's being recommended is that the set-asides in this fishery for observers and research set-asides are going to be taken out higher up in the flowchart than we do currently. Right now, we set aside 3% of the allocated projected catch for these purposes, whereas in this flowchart, you'll see that it's higher up before the ACL is then divided into the fisheries and with a target catch. So the end result is that that's a higher amount of quota or catch that would be available for set-asides and observer coverage. This decision was made by the committee to recognize that there's no uncertainty related to this amount of catch, so it should be, you basically, no buffer should be incorporated in separating out that available catch. So the purple boxes on the square show you the allocative decision you made under Amendment 11, which gives 94.5% of the ACL to the limited access fishery and 5.5 to the general category. The 0.5, just to remind you, are for those limited access vessels that also qualify for a general category permit. So the big things to notice in this flowchart and make sure you appreciate would be that the ACL is completely divided right away from the top. This was an adjustment made later in the process. And the orange box at the bottom is where you'll see the difference for the ACT. So each fishery would then be responsible not to exceed that ACL amount. There's two alternatives for the management uncertainty buffer for the limited access fishery and two alternatives for the general category side. I'll get into those in more detail later after you make the overall decision. So as Dr. Pierce mentioned, the first kind of large decision would be, do you agree with this structure and all the definitions and everything described in section 3.2.3.2 of the document and more clearly explained in the figure within the EIS on page 44? Advisors reviewed this. They believe it is consistent with current law. The committee obviously developed it with the PDT. Again, there's a longer motion there, motion number one, to adopt basically the ACL, ACT, ABC structure identified in these sections, including the ACTs, including the North, where everything's basically divvied out. This was a unanimous vote. In addition, motion number two was to kind of very clearly approve the ABC control rule as developed by the PDT and approved by the SSC. Both of those were unanimous votes. Do you want to do just a few ACL decisions up front, or do you want me to stop each time? There's really just a few about, maybe I'll stop before the yellowtail, kind of get into the two. Okay, that's what we did at the committee meeting. Seemed to work all right. Okay, so the next decisions after you think about the overall flowchart would be to talk about the management uncertainty buffer that's being considered for the two separate fisheries. The document includes for the limited access fishery, as I said, two different alternatives. The first one is a more model-based approach, which mirrors the one that the SSC adopted for setting ABC. And in this case, we would set ACT for the limited access fishery at the fishing mortality rate that has a 25% chance of exceeding ABC. So it's a very similar in idea in what it does. It happens to come out right now in this fishing year to be somewhere equivalent to about a 12% reduction between where the limited access fishery ACL is and where the ACT would be. So it's roughly a buffer of a little over 12%. The other alternative is a more kind of ad hoc 10% reduction to recognize that our estimates of LPUE are not always accurate, and sometimes the fishery catches more and sometimes it may catch less. So it would be kind of the PDT discussed that 10% would be a reasonable buffer to kind of account for that uncertainty in days at sea. The limited access general category fishery also has two alternatives. The first one is a 0% buffer. By the way, that's the committee's preferred as well as the advisors. And there's some rationale there in the committee document to explain why they went with 0%. And there is an alternative in the document of up to 5%. So for each of those fisheries, you'll have to decide today what the buffer, the appropriate buffer would be for each fishery. Again, the advisors and committee both support the 25% chance of exceeding alternative for the limited access fishery. They felt that was the most justified in the work that was went into identifying that. And for the general category fishery, 0% is the preferred recommendation. So here are the committee motions on slide 7. That basically just say what I just said. Decision 3 has to do with the accountability measures, and these are actually a package. They're not distinct alternatives. The limited access fishery, the advisory panel, and committee motion both recommending that it should be a package of all three of the alternatives considered. That would be basically the use of an ACT, and then in the event that the limited access fishery does exceed their ACL, that the following year, days at sea would be reduced across the board equally among vessels. We'd basically, the PDT would determine what the overage was. We would calculate back based on the current estimate of days catch per day, and all vessels kind of mid-year would be notified by the agency by letter saying, okay, because you went over in year one, everyone's days will be reduced by 1.2 or something like that. There would be a disclaimer that both groups, the advisors and committee, are recommending you include. And basically the disclaimer is that when the PDT does that re-estimation in the following year, summer following the fishing year, if in their new calculations they learn that the fishery did exceed their ACL, but the updated estimate of F is actually lower than one standard, at least one standard deviation lower than what the target was, then no AMs would be triggered. So this is trying to recognize that if biomass is much higher than we thought, if catch per day estimates were much, you know, greatly off, and the fishery actually didn't catch more that would impact the the fishing mortality on the resource, then AMs would not trigger. So it's a combination of those three things that the committee's recommending for accountability measures. In terms of the general category fishery, this is also a package you would use in ACT, as well as if an individual, this is an individual-based AM, if an individual exceeds their quota in 1 year, in year one, not only would they be facing any kind of enforcement or penalties that way, that they actually would lose that overage in their next year's quota. So it would be an individual accountability, not just, you know, the enforcement side of it, but this would actually be a lowered quota equivalent to whatever the overage was, provided that this, you know, could be monitored effectively that way. So those are the different accountability measures under consideration. This is a slide. The next slide has the advisory panel motions related to these. I'll just point out that motion 6 from the advisors did try to expand on the limited access disclaimer idea to try to kind of incorporate that over to the general category side. The committee discussed this and reviewed it and decided not to forward it as part of the preferred final strategy. So slide 10 includes the committee motions related to the accountability measures for both fleets there, and you'll see their final recommendations. So I'll probably stop there. That's all scallop-related ACLs and AMs, and then we can take those motions before we get into yellowtail AMs.
Is it possible to do one motion with all the preferreds for
yes.
all of these issues?
Yes, one motion at a time.
Excellent. Yeah. David?
Yeah, Deirdre has brought us through decision 1, 2A, 2B, and 3A, 3B. Basically, that's the ACL structure, then the management uncertainty, and the accountability measures. And that all relates to what needs to be done as part of the control rule specifically. So she has done a very good job giving the council the PDT perspective as well as what the advisory panel has recommended for the most part on these issues. The AP is supportive of what the committee has decided to recommend to you. On behalf of the committee, therefore, relative to decision 1 on the ACL structure, I would move to recommend adoption of the ACL, ACT, ABC structure identified and described in sections 3.2.3.2 through 3.2.3.8 of Amendment 15, together with the proposed sub-ACLs, the ACTs, structural flowchart, and related methods to account for discards, incidental catch, Northern Gulf of Maine catch, state waters catch, and other sources of mortality.
We're going to stop there. We're not going to do the rest of it. Okay. Any questions for clarification before I go to the audience for clarification? David?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I just had my eye drops and I can't read the board clearly. I can read the decision document, though. So is this decision 2A? Is that correct? Could you just go through?
No, this is decision 1 on page 2 of the decision document. There's a lot in it, admittedly. When you see the there's a lot in it. There are a lot of sectors. So this covers the whole ball of wax, the whole ACL structure that's shown on page 40, and it's also in the PowerPoint presentation by Deirdre.
Okay, so it's decision 1 on page 2 of the decision document, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
That is motion number 1 at the bottom of the page under committee.
Anyone else? Questions of clarification? Okay, seeing none, I'll go to the audience. Any comments from the audience? Drew, come on down. You look a little lonely out there. There's a lot of empty seats around you now. In fact, I didn't even see you before. I didn't even see you during the other debates.
Yeah, maybe something I said or didn't say. I don't know. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. We strongly support this motion. A lot of work, a lot of great work by Deirdre and the PDT went into developing this. It's in conformity with the law, and it will help us continue to sustainably manage the scallop fishery, so we encourage your support. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Anything from the council members? On the motion on the board, Paul Howard.
Just going to remind the council and ask Deirdre. In 2008, we were 10 million pounds over. 2009, 10 million. And where do we stand now with looking at the landings? Are they going to be for frame? We've got framework 22 coming in. That's where we're going to actually set the ACL, right? Okay. So how are the landings tracking from framework 21 that we stayed? Are we going to be 10 million over for 3 years in a row? Just so we get an idea of what is going to happen in November. Are we tracking for 10 million over again 3 years in a row?
I feel like I'm being set up, but yes, we are tracking that we'll probably be catching around there. Fishing mortality is a different story, but.
And if I may, that's why the motions that will be made next relate to the committee and then the council's concern about what the catch may be in the upcoming years and the need to consider a higher degree of uncertainty.
Anyone else on the council? Motion on the board. Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries.
The next motion, again under Decision 1, the ACL structure, is move to recommend adoption of the ABC control rule in Section 3.2.3.7.3 so that the ABC will be set at a fishing rate that has a 25% probability of overfishing.
Questions or clarification? Seeing none, go to the audience. Anything from the audience? Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. We support this option. I just see something that I find disturbing, and it goes back to last November when we were dealing with Framework 21 as well, where this perception came on that we were somehow near overfishing and overfishing, and that tainted the decisions the council was making. We are not overfishing. I had brought up in Framework 18 that there's something wrong with the inshore surveys. We're underestimating the abundance in the biomass. Hopefully, we've submitted an RSA proposal as an industry with VIMS to go do some open area surveys with the survey dredge and commercial dredge to get a handle on what that problem is. A part of it is the meat weight. This year, the fleet was reporting to me very large catches. Unfortunately, the Observer program has very limited meat weight sampling, but I managed to get those samples and looked at them. We were averaging 9.5 pounds per bushel, where the model projected something like 7.5. That's 20 to 25% more weight per shell height. That's a significant issue. Our landings per unit effort are way up above projections. That's what happened in the previous years. Yet if you look at what the fleet is landing, every year, higher catches per day, more U-10s, 10-20s, no 20-30s. The resource is there. It's very large. And we're just not getting the right numbers in the projections. And we have to deal with that, and we're putting a lot of research effort into hopefully getting a better handle on that. It's the same issue with bycatch species that we're all aware of. If we underestimate what's in the water, we're going to look like we're over-harvesting winter flounder, skates, yellowtail, you name it. So please don't taint your decisions with this idea that we're on some verge of disaster. We're not. We're doing really well.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a small point, but it's, would you look at that? I'm not going to make a motion to change it, but it would look a lot better if it said that we have a 75% chance of not overfishing. We're going forward with a negative statement here. That's all.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 15. Dave?
Okay, next is a decision 2A that relates to the limited access fishery, specifically the management uncertainty. This is on page 3 of the decision document. You go to the bottom of that page, you will see the committee motion. I move on behalf of the committee option 1 in section 3.2.3.8.1 as the preferred alternative, establishing the limited access ACT at a fishing mortality rate with a 25% probability of exceeding the limited access ACL to account for management uncertainty.
Any questions for clarification? Go to the audience. Anyone in the audience? Drew.
Thank you, Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. We strongly support this motion as well. And for clarification, when the executive director asked about 10 million over, 10 million over, 10 million over, he was referring to the target, not to overfishing, not to the ABC or ACL. For clarification, we are on track to, yes, exceed the target, but if there were an ACL in place this year, we are not on track to exceed the ACL, therefore we're not on track to exceed any accountability measures if they were in place. And that's a big distinction that everyone needs to understand, that the target that we're setting here is in place because there is uncertainty. But if we exceed the target, that's okay. It's the ACL being exceeded, the 62 or 65 million pounds that in the total fishery that would require any action, and we're not in any way in target to do that. So I just want to make that point very clear to everyone. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Council? Anything? Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fifteen. David?
Now we go to the next motion, which relates to the management uncertainty for the limited access general category vessels. I would move on behalf of the committee option 1 in section 3.2.3.8.2 as the preferred alternative, establishing the limited access general category ACT equal to the limited access general category ACL with no buffer.
Any questions, clarification? Go to the audience. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This time of day, the acronyms start to make me scratch my head. I wasn't able to attend the committee meeting, so I'm a little confused by this motion, only in that I don't understand why you need an ACT at all if you're setting it equal to the ACL. So my question is that because you're just setting up the structure so that in the future you may decide to have some kind of buffer in between the ACL and the ACT?
I think so, but I'll let staff or David answer.
Well, I'll let Deirdre jump in here, but we've already adopted the flowchart. So if you go to the flowchart, Maggie, you'll see that the ACT is something that we have purposefully included as part of the ACL structure, and it's to deal with the management uncertainty end of it. We're going this route, different from the route we've taken with most groundfish species. This was a decision made by the council back in the fall, and we're still following through with it, and we have the support of the industry for this particular strategy, at least the advisory panel.
I'll just quickly add on there. I think if you reference the paragraph about the committee's rationale and, about this motion in document 9, is at the bottom, it's motion 4. The other thing that's important, I think, to point out is some people on the committee were a little uncomfortable at first setting it at 0%. With nothing at all, particularly in light of the fact that they were going to approve the 15% rollover. In those events, you'd actually, everything would be fine. You'd be over your ACL and nothing would be triggered. And at first, people were concerned about that. But then I think by having the structure in place, having it at zero now, the comfort level increased when people said, okay, well, if we get in this situation a lot and a lot of people start carrying over, then we might have to revisit this buffer.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Council members, Rick Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just point out that the PDT did also express some concern with respect to this issue about spatial exploitation and the need to account for that, but we decided as a committee, I think, that it was better to deal with that directly in the overfishing definition and take into account spatial considerations there, and we subsequently took that up in a later motion related to overfishing definition. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. I almost wonder, Dave, if we should just ask the council if they object to any of the motions you're going to throw up on the board. It's unanimous. It means you're doing good work, Dave.
Well, give me time. sooner or later. All right. Motion 5. This pertains to the accountability measures. And decision 3A, limited access vessels. The rationale for the motion is on page 2. I won't read it yet since I haven't made the motion. I would move on behalf of the committee to recommend adoption of the limited access accountability measures described in section 3.2.3.9.1 of Amendment 15, including, number 1, use of an ACT, an act, 2, overall days at sea reduction in the subsequent year to account for overage, and 3, include disclaimer for when the limited access accountability measure would not be triggered. So that is the motion on behalf of the committee. Rationale is provided on page 2 of the summary of all of our committee motions. I won't get into that unless someone would request some further elaboration. And Deidre has already explained the nature of the disclaimer.
Any questions for clarification? Go to the audience. Anything from the audience? Tom Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We strongly oppose the disclaimer language, and I hate to say this late in the afternoon and hate to slow the train down, but there's a big problem with the disclaimer alternative as it's currently written, in that it only allows for a disclaimer for one portion of the fleet, that's a limited access portion, and doesn't in any way maintain the 95-5 split in this fishery that was the council's intent. I think we can see evidence of this trend in the last 2 years, 2008, 2009, where in both instances the general category maintained harvest under its hard tack. The limited access portion of the fleet exceeded their hard tack, and in essence, the allocation between those two portions of the fishery was skewed. The general category wasn't able to harvest and take advantage of all their fishing opportunities. The AP actually suggested a small revision to this disclaimer rule, some language which would actually allow it to compensate the general category and ensure that 95-5 split between the fishery was preserved. I've also suggested some language, but in essence, the idea would be that 5.5% of the difference between the exceeded sub-ACL on the limited access side and what they actually harvested in that year, if the disclaimer was triggered, would then be applied to the limited access general category IFQ program in the following year to be distributed exactly like all the other quota. So that's basically the idea in a nutshell. There's some language I know in the AP motions and some slightly revised language in an email that I sent around to council members, but unless this disclaimer is revised, we can't support it. It fundamentally changes how fishing opportunities are broken down in the scallop fishery. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Tom?
Hello, Tom Riley. fisherman out of Chatham on general category. I also support what Tom Dempsey just said, and in very simple terms, we as a general category fishery with only 5% of the overall quota should not be penalized if the larger vessels go over it. I ask you please to take this into consideration and make some changes to make sure that this is that we do get our 5%. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Paul Howard.
Dee, how would that work? Say the landings are over the ABC or the ACL, then how do you determine F rate? Would you have to look at additional landings, do an additional updated assessment, or how do you determine F?
Well, in the system that...
When would that all happen? And then it would have to go into a year and a half ahead, or you must have thought about how you'd do this.
Well, since the idea just came up last week, we haven't thought about it a lot. But the way it was discussed at the advisory panel meeting and a little bit at the committee meeting was that the structure and idea that you've all just adopted through the ACL flowchart and the way the AMs would work for the fisheries is that the next year the PDT is always going to have to re-look at a catch when everything's final. NIMS, PDT is going to have to do that every year forever now to see where everything was. Did anyone exceed their ACLs? And when we re-estimate F, we will be doing that anyway. If the re-estimated F for the fishery is not just equal to what it was before, but it's actually an entire standard deviation lower, and those limited access accountability measures do not trigger, the idea of, or how this, I guess, would actually work is that then we would calculate 5.5% of that difference between what the projected ACL was, the catch for that, and what they actually caught. So just in terms, let's say that's 5 million pounds, the difference. We would actually then allocate 5.5% of 5 million pounds to the general category fishery, not in that same, year two. At least in the advisor's motion, they're suggesting year three because it would be mid-year.
No, my question isn't how you allocate, but how are you going to determine the F? How much work is needed? In other words, we know the landings come in, and the landings are over the ACL, let's say. But the caveat is it doesn't matter that you're over ABC. We've got the caveat that says F rate matters. So how are you going to determine that F rate?
We're going to do that every year. The PDT is going to have to re-estimate F every year.
Okay. So with the stock assessment?
No, just the PDT would do
just
it.
Just the PDT.
We do that now sometimes when it's too many years between a stock assessment like we did, in Framework 21. We do that in between years. We have the model and just rerun it with the New Year's information. I could just finish so people, because I don't know if everyone's understanding this new idea. So that 5.5% of the difference of catch is... It's not really coming from anywhere. It's almost a compensation, if you will, for the 1 year having a miscalculation in LPUE or biomass or whatever it was, because the limited access fisheries governed under days at sea, they almost de facto can take advantage of those higher catch rates just by catching more per day, but the general category vessels cannot because they're on a quota. So it's almost a... additional or compensation pounds that would be awarded to that fleet in year three, essentially, is how we've figured out that it could work. But it is almost a new poundage. It's not coming from somewhere else.
That differs from the way that we had understood it. And if it's new poundage, then in fact you would in the subsequent year end up with catch levels higher than the ACLs, the recommended ACLs, or did I misunderstand again? I mean, one way or the other, you still have to stay within the ACL for that year. And so if there's some sort of, I guess I'll stop there. I may have misunderstood, but it should, you know, it shouldn't be additive in any way.
Additive to year one, I guess, is that it's,
in
and I think
past.
Hannah raised this point, yes.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? Oh, no, I see Mark. Mark.
Yeah, I just inject my feelings about this. The disclaimer is a little hard to wrap your head around, and the adjustment for the general category fishery is even harder because where does the pounds come from? But I think the fact that it's possible that one portion of the fishery can get an after the fact boost in the ACL or some kind of bonus, and one side doesn't. There's a fundamental unfairness there that somehow we need to address, but it's probably going to take some discussion with the PDT to figure out how to do that. But I think something needs to be done.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dee, we had some of this discussion, and I think you pointed out that I think Amendment 11 gave the general category 5% of the projected catch. How does that? And I'm trying to make sure that we keep them as whole as possible. How does that play into their concerns on the trigger?
They're related. At the committee meeting on September 7th, it was clarified for your discussion of your previous motion about which buffers are appropriate to use and where to separate things out. And Amendment 11 very clearly said, and as we discussed at that committee meeting, that the general category fishery would be allocated 5% of the projected catch. And we put that in there on purpose because it's not a guarantee that at the end of the day it's going to be 5% of actual catch. We can't guarantee that when you have days at sea management and access area trips that are not always fully prosecuted and, you know, days at sea carryover. And it's not a guarantee percentage breakdown on actual catch. It's a projected catch. So starting out of the gate, that's the intent of the council. With now ACLs and a whole different world, I believe the disclaimer refinement that's being suggested would actually get more at 5% of actual catch, because you're going to have one sector of the fishery stuck at whatever they're given, the quota fishery, and then the other fishery has more flexibility. Some years they could go more because they'll catch more per day, and some years the estimates could be off and they'll be lower, and the actual percentage the GenCat gets could go up or down of 5%. But this disclaimer on one end, I guess, has a higher risk of allowing that actual catch percentage to be lower for the general category fishery, where if you add that other idea, it would get you closer to 5% of actual catch. But to be clear, that was never, Amendment 11 never pretended that it would be actual catch. It was always known that it would be projected.
Is that the summary of the committee's discussion, Dr. Pierce?
Perfectly.
Anyone else on the council? David?
Just to Deidre, are you satisfied then that the language in the motion as we currently have it allows you to solve the issues that have been raised, or do we need to modify the language?
The language on the screen is completely silent on the general category side of what's been raised by the public. This just is a disclaimer as it's written now for the limited access side.
So do we need a separate motion then to address that issue, or...
The committee chose not to include it in their motion, so, you know, this is the committee motion. So, do with it what you want, but it's not in there.
I guess the answer to you, Dave, is if you want to attempt to address it, you would need to either amend this motion or make a subsequent motion.
Yeah, that was my question. I think it would be easier through a subsequent motion because I think it's a separate issue to this. It's something that wasn't anticipated when this was thought out.
Anyone else on the council? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Fifteen. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. Motion carries 15-0. One abstention.
Okay, the next motion, once again, it's about accountability measures. This time it's for the general category fisheries. So I would move on behalf of the committee, motion six, which is to recommend adoption of the general category accountability measures in section 3.2.3.9.2 of amendment 15, including number one, use of an ACT, number two, IFQ reductions in the subsequent year if the IFQ is exceeded.
Questions for clarification? Go to the audience. Comments on the motion on the board? Back to the council. Comments on the motion on the board? Seeing none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Unanimous. Keep rolling, Dave.
Motion number seven, I move on behalf of the committee to recommend adoption of the Northern Gulf of Maine accountability measures in section 3.2.3.9.3 of Amendment 15, including reducing the hard TAC in the subsequent year to account for an overage.
Questions, clarification? Jimmy?
Just a question. This one doesn't appear to me to have the same, if I understood the other sectors, that if they overrun their TAC but didn't exceed their F, they don't have a payback. And this one seems to read differently than that to me.
The Northern Gulf of Maine hard tack, yeah, if they exceed their hard tack, this one is not associated with a certain F. This is a little bit different that way, in that it's a separate part of the resource. If they exceed their hard tack, then it would be an equivalent reduction in the next year.
Can I ask why it's different? I mean,
we don't really know a lot about this area. We only have 1 year of a survey data. We just don't have, and it's not included in the overall assessment of the scallop fishery, which is a much more involved Georges Bank and Mid-Atlantic assessment of the resource and the fishery. It's distinct in that regard.
Anyone else on the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. 16. Dave?
I believe we now transition to a discussion of the yellowtail flounder measures. So, Deirdre, if you would provide some additional presentation.
Sure. In talking about how to get through the yellowtail AM section, I was going to briefly summarize the alternatives that are currently in the document. When the committee reviewed this last week, we were made aware that the groundfish PDT was also reviewing these measures as requested by the groundfish committee to help you and provide some additional information about the potential effectiveness of these measures in terms of yellowtail protection and accountability. So I think what we should do is, or what Tom Neese and I talked about doing, is having just a quick summary of the alternatives. Then he can review the groundfish PDT memo that was sent to the Ground Fish Committee and Council, I believe, which is under tab 3, so he can highlight some of the issues and questions that they had about the AMs. And then in the time we had from last week and in sitting down, Tom and I have tried to respond to some of those issues as quickly as we could and come up with some sort of off-the-cuff maybe solutions. And we tried to talk to a subset of both of our PDTs about ways to hopefully address some of the concerns that have been raised, and hopefully we've addressed some of them. And then I can present those after he goes through the memo. So hope this one might take a little bit longer than the others. So this is a difficult issue. The scallop fishery has been allocated a sub-ACL of yellowtail, and then the idea was that the scallop plan would come up with the accountability measures for that sub-ACL. This is really hard. A lot of the alternatives have distributional impacts. We're not even sure how effective they'll actually be for yellowtail. None of the range is popular. The public comments we got on these were not favorable. People don't even like talking about them. But they are what they are. The first option would be a seasonal closure of pre-identified areas, one for Southern New England Mid-Atlantic stock and one for the Georges Bank yellowtail stock. There's two options with this one. It could be an in-season closure, or in year three, after that it's been determined that an ACL was exceeded, these areas would close for the amount of time equivalent to what that overage was. So what we did is we took each of the statistical areas in the ocean and determined a DK ratio of discarded yellowtail to scallops kept, and identified and ranked for each yellowtail stock area the statistical areas with the highest DK ratio, and then provided basically a percentage of yellowtail and scallops related to each of those stock areas so you can get a sense of what the potential gain would be of yellowtail by closing it compared to the scallop loss of yield. So the areas that light up have the highest DK ratios. For Southern New England, it's those three statistical areas, basically south of Rhode Island and expanded. And then for Georges Bank, it's essentially the one statistical area that includes the closed area to access area. So if an ACL is exceeded, those areas would either close in season or in the future for some portion of time. The second alternative would be you would track the yellowtail caught by the scallop fishery, and when NIMS projects that the ACL has been exceeded, the entire yellowtail stock area would close. So I don't have one on the screen, but essentially the yellowtail stock boundaries, the entire thing would close to all scallop fishing, both fisheries. Third alternative would be a fleet-wide maximum of days at sea and a fleet-wide maximum of quota that could be used in year three, as it's written in the document, per stock area. So if you learn that you've exceeded a certain yellowtail ACL by, 10,000 pounds, we would determine, the PDT would later determine how many days at sea are associated or expected to need to be used to catch that amount of yellowtail, and you would put in a maximum for the fleet, essentially saying, as soon as that amount of days are fished, that area would close so that you don't end up impacting additional yellowtail. In terms of the general category fleet, it would be a fleet-wide quota maximum amount that would be set for an area, and when that's hit, vessels, if they still have quota, will have to fish in a different yellowtail stock area or lease it. Individual max days at sea, this would be the same idea, except instead of a fleet-wide max, you would have an individual maximum. And this was to try to get away from some of the Derby effects, but in reality, this one was probably even more unpopular because it has such great distributional impacts if these areas are near where you happen to fish. The last alternative was moved to the considered and rejected section because it was taken up by the joint groundfish scallop panel, and we will probably be revisiting that in a different action. So those are the four main alternatives. The issues to clarify, the committee has addressed both of these. If you recall, this council specifically said before this EIS went out to the public that, if you remember, there's this 1 year where potentially the groundfish fishery may be held accountable for an overage from 2010 because Amendment 15 is not in place yet, and this council said that wasn't acceptable Instead, there should be some sort of reach-back provision so that if the total yellowtail ACL is exceeded because of the scallop fishery, then the scallop fishery would be held accountable and not the groundfish fishery. So the committee discussed this. They did pass a motion that whatever you adopt as an AM for yellowtail, the same would apply for this first year. So we're going to be going back right away if there's an overage. I did understand there was going to be a presentation potentially at this council meeting about where we are with those ACLs. I wasn't here yesterday. I don't know if that happened, but nobody's nodding at me, so I don't know if it did. So we could get a better sense of where we actually are tracking with that yellowtail catch, if that's available. The other thing the committee did clarify that there was a question of this is going to get probably down to the partial day at sea in terms of accountability, and if, in fact, that's the case, then the agency did tell us that they would be able to implement partial days at sea and monitor that. So if it gets to the point there wouldn't need to be any rounding, we would be doing partial day at sea accountability measures. So the advisors reviewed these alternatives, and they did provide a preferred alternative, although they were very nervous, concerns, lots of impacts, a lot of people worried about these things. But they did support, if they had to pick one, seasonal closure, the first alternative. And they did support year three because they felt that doing anything in season would have, you know, big derby effects. They see it in their access area programs. They know it occurs. Derbies are, you know, something everyone wants to avoid. So they were more supportive of the year three option. And the committee picked the same. So the committee alternative is the same as the advisory panel alternative on this issue. So I could turn to Tom if he wants to start going through the groundfish memo. Hopefully everyone has it behind tab three. I don't know what number it is, but they do have some issues. And then I can document 11 under the scallop tab you might want to grab out while he's getting up here. That's basically, I took the yellowtail AM section out of Amendment 15 and tried to update it with some underlined sections with some ideas to hopefully address some of the issues the groundfish PDT has noted for us.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, before Tom starts. Yeah, the committee wrestled with this. This was certainly was a very difficult issue, largely because we were unaware of the groundfish plan development team perspective on this issue at that time. We were influenced very strongly by the fact that many of these options would create a derby, and that was the one thing we wanted to avoid. No selection or recommendation of an alternative that would promote derby fishing. So the option that we provided to you was the best we could do at the time, recognizing that now this council will have the benefit of Tom's presentation, and then we see how that influences your decision on the motion I'll eventually present on behalf of the committee.
I guess before we even go to Tom, I'm just curious, was the groundfish AP asked their opinion of this?
No.
So the groundfish AP, the industry AP, hasn't weighed in on this from the groundfish perspective. Okay. Thanks. Tom?
A long explanation will be as popular as a smelly axilla. There you go, Frank. So I'll try to be quick. Memo number 15. In the back of the groundfish document, it's document number 15. I think I can quickly summarize one of the main concerns of the groundfish PDT for most of these proposed AMs is timing, and a second issue is monitoring. To go through them in the order that Deirdre talked about them, with respect to the seasonal closure of a portion of the stock area, our big issue here is that particularly in the areas that are proposed for southern New England, the issue is what is the timing of an in-season closure if you choose an in-season closure. If you go for a closure that happens a year or two later, one of our issues is how do you determine what the length of the seasonal closure is. And the effectiveness of this measure, we think, on preventing overfishing of yellowtail flounder is really critically dependent on that issue. We looked at some of the evidence, and it seems to show that fishing in that area tends to happen in the early part of the fishing year, scallop fishing. Presumably, that's when most of the yellowtail bycatch is.
Only 30% of the yellowtail comes out of that area. So if your overage is going to be more than 30%, unless you close it for the entire year, you're not going to make up for it. And if you're well into the fishing year, you're not going to have enough time to make up for it either. Another issue that relates to that is, what about effort shifts that are going to happen, either in anticipation of the closure or because of the closure that gets implemented? With respect to the seasonal closure on George's Bank, now, there's not a lot of information in the draft document about whether this measure will be effective in years when the George's Bank access area is not open. As you recall, the statistical area straddles the George's Bank access area. That's typically where a lot of the yellowtail bycatch is. If that area isn't open to begin with, do you have enough area that's affected by the seasonal closure for it to be effective, whether it's done in the first year or later? We're also a little bit concerned with the idea that this measure could be delayed. If there's an overage in year one, nothing may happen until year three. Potentially, as a result of that, you may wind up in exceeding your ACL for yellowtail 2 years in a row before any of these AMs are triggered. We were somewhat confused by why the document was suggesting an in-season closure might be possible, but if you're going to do it in a later year, you have to wait till year three. It didn't really seem to follow. Moving on to the next measure, in-season closure of the entire yellowtail flounder stock area. This one would probably work for preventing overfishing of yellowtail flounder, assuming monitoring is adequate, for at least two of the stocks. But if you recall, this AM would not apply for Cape Cod, Gulf of Maine yellowtail, so if you wound up closing one or both of these areas and they shifted effort into the Gulf of Maine, then you're not going to solve the problem of you're going to create a problem in the Gulf of Maine if scallop effort shifts there. With respect to the fleet-wide maximum days at sea, whether this is an overall fleet-wide or an individual approach, we look at this as really similar impacts on yellowtail flounder. Our concern is that changing the days at sea that can be used in one area doesn't change the overall effort. And so presumably if you limit the days at sea that can be used in one area, you're going to divert the effort into another area. If you've already set up a scallop yellowtail flounder ACL in that area and you haven't taken into account this shift of effort, then you're likely to exceed the ACL in that area. So you could wind up with just bouncing the problem back and forth between the two different areas with this. It's also important to note that with this particular measure, it applies to days at sea, but it doesn't have any effect on access area trips. So once again, it's not clear to us exactly how this AM would be effective if the access areas are opening and closing. Most of the yellowtail bycatch quite often comes out of the access areas, particularly for George's Bank, or primarily for George's Bank access areas. So, you know, if you're not affecting those access area trips, how effective is your AM? There's another issue that relates to the George's Bank yellowtail question, and that is that under the U.S.-Canada agreement, if we have an overage of our overall TAC for U.S.-Canada, the rules say right away in the very following year we're going to reduce the TAC and take measures to reduce our catch in the following year. It's a payback provision. The current regulations say that the segment of the fishery, either common pool, sector, or scallop fishery, responsible for the overage is the one that suffers the payback. This, in effect, is an AM, but if it's a scallop fishery that's effective and you're delaying any AM until year three, then this year two overage appears to be somewhat of a paper exercise, and we're not sure how that'll fly in the U.S.-Canada arena. Sort of in conclusion, I sort of highlighted a lot of the negative points of these things, but I want to emphasize that we only looked at them from one aspect, and that is how well are they likely to prevent exceeding the ACL for yellowtail flounder. So we haven't looked at any of the pros or cons about what the impacts of these different AMs are in the scallop fishery with respect to distributional impacts or shifting of scallop effort. Our general conclusion was that all the alternatives that are presented to you have the potential for controlling yellowtail catches by the scallop fishery, but that at least several of them need some details to be worked out if they're actually going to be effective.
Questions for Tom? Tom, did the groundfish PDT review all of the alternatives that were put together? on this issue?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by all the alternatives. We reviewed the ones that were proposed for action in the draft amendment. We did not review the considered and rejected alternative, for example.
Okay. Thank you. Jimmy?
You know, when it comes to the three-year payback, I can't imagine what it would be like based on the past couple of scallop actions being in this room when we proposed to shut down the scallop fisheries 3 years from now because of an overage of yellowtails 3 years prior. So I think we have to do something a little closer than 3 years out. Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure if I remember the discussion correctly, but I'll give it a shot. It seemed to me that this three-year out issue was the same in herring, in that you get your final information from the service in the spring of the year, and we're on a calendar year for herring. So the year ends December 31st. The PDT has all of the information, hopefully by May. If you were to go over, then you would have the number, and then it would be deducted from not the fishing year you're in, but the following fishing year. So when you say year three, it really is 6 months after you have the data in hand. Which I'm not sure if that helps Jimmy out, but that's what the measure is. And I guess I just did have one question. The current monitoring system that we have to track yellowtail is observers. And what's the observer rate in this fishery? I've seen references to number of days covered, but I couldn't find a percent. Does anybody know?
Pete tells me. They're targeting about 10% in the open areas. But it's higher in the access areas, and that's right now where we're calculating the yellowtail bycatch. So it's not clear to me there's sufficient observer coverage to cover both the access areas and the open areas on a real-time basis, to do projections on a real-time basis.
The other question I had, and I don't know if it's possible to do it in this amendment, but the vessels are reporting on a daily basis in the access areas and not in the open areas. And if we're going to track yellowtail, can we require them to report daily regardless of where they're fishing?
We can certainly do that, but what we use is the observer information as a backup to that information. And so you still need a sufficient level of observer coverage to validate that information.
So if we can require them to report on a daily basis and they're required to keep all legal yellowtail, then one would hope that would be, and then back it up with observers, we could monitor this.
Dave Gale?
I think this will be a question for Tom. When I look at all these options, they seem to be reactive options. If this amount of yellowtail was caught, then this happened sometime near hand or far away. Except for the last one, which has revised the opening date of access areas on Georgia's Bank, which would seem to be more proactive in that we could schedule the opening around the presence or absence of the fish. And I wondered if the PDT had any comment on that, because, My yellowtail experience tells me that yellowtail are very patchy and are very seasonally distributed in high concentrations. And it would seem we might be able to solve the problem in advance by determining when the scallop fleet fishes in the area where the yellowtail are.
The scallop PDT did. We talked about that a lot, as well as a couple other ideas of how to reduce or have more proactive ways to reduce yellowtail catch. Changes to gear and things like that, and we actually had some specific suggestions. This, the date one in particular, when we started to have that joint groundfish scallop committee take off, that's a groundfish action. We couldn't do it in this amendment anyway, and the idea is that there would be this other joint action that would do more of the issues related to reducing yellowtail bycatch in a more holistic way through that joint action. The other input we got is that those are not exactly AMs. It's not an actual measure that's triggered when something is exceeded. There are good things we should probably do to help reduce the risk of exceeding an ACL, but they're not technically AMs.
Sally?
And I know this isn't technically an AM, but I'm wondering what the committee discussion was about the SMAST project on hotspot reporting and how that fits in with this, because I tend to agree with the discussion earlier, and I mean, I was part of the discussion with, you know, the being able to respond in a timely way, and year three absolutely does seem incredibly delayed, and I can't imagine what the discussion would be like, as was previously mentioned. But SMAS hotspot reporting?
Yeah, Sally raises a good point. We did mention that. Yeah, we're encouraged by what SMAS is doing with the sea scallop fishery. A lot of good work is being done. It appears to be working rather well. So with that assumed continuation and expanded cooperation, that yellowtail avoidance approach, we would expect that the yellowtail flounder bycatch would drop dramatically. But again, it's just an expectation. There's no way to predict how this will pan out. I think that might have had some influence on the committee's decision to go with accountability measure year three, since, once again, the other options tended to complicate matters relative to Derby fishing and other issues described in the decision document specific to ecological impacts, shifts of effort, concern about turtle catch, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, this was a tough nut, and we really haven't cracked it, obviously, especially in light of the comments made by Tom. I haven't yet made the motion on behalf of the committee, Mr. Chairman. Tell me when you're ready for that, but Deirdre does apparently have something else to add to that.
I didn't know if you wanted to segue into, you know, Tom and I have spent as much time as we could since the committee meeting to try to solve some of these constructive criticisms that were raised about the alternatives, and I think we agreed to disagree about a few things and tried to come up with maybe some things to address, primarily the timing, monitoring, and year three issue. So I can go through those a little bit if you want, just to take a few minutes. In document 11 that I was describing before, maybe people would have a better comfort level of the committee's AM alternative if those were clarified. So document 11 is, as I said, just an excerpt from amendment 15, and I've tried to underline the sections that are new to hopefully respond to some of the groundfish PDT concerns. Not about all of them. We definitely can't answer them all, but about what we think are the major stumbling things related to the preferred alternative anyway. So that document is mostly just what was in the EIS, and if you flip more toward the back of it, when you actually get to the timing and monitoring, page 13, the first issue is monitoring, and the committee knew that the monitoring wasn't completely clear going out with this EIS, and we only really had that small paragraph that was there with the underlying sentence saying that monitoring yellowtail sub-ACLs may necessitate new monitoring requirements, and the agency told us that depending on which direction it took would require different kinds of monitoring. So the committee discussed this last week. We had a long discussion. Some ideas were floated around. The text that's underlined are some general ideas that were discussed at the committee level in terms of new things that would potentially be required about reporting yellowtail catch, scallop catch, and all species kept by yellowtail stock area, some new VMS codes that would have to be designed. And the idea was that the regional office would go back between then and today to give us, you know, more specific things. So depending if you go real time or if you do something subsequent or year three, we should come back and revisit this. But in terms of the timing, which I think is the big question that everyone had about how this seasonal closure would work, is what we tried to spend time on that goes on to page 14 and 15. And basically there's just some options laid out here with more detail about how the timing actually would work. And we tried to think a little bit more about that. So if you go with an in-season AM, the paragraph on page 14 is probably what would happen. Something we explored more that we didn't earlier is a subsequent year AM, similar to the way the scallop AMs are going to work, which is not what Mary Beth explained with herring. It is the year three approach that we did take with this. I think after the criticism that came up from the public hearing process, nobody was happy about year three. We originally thought it had to be that way because we wanted to wait until those final yellowtail numbers were available. But we do think now there are two options in here for subsequent year AMs that are workable. The first one is actually based on during the year. The part that's underlined is that NIMS will determine if the yellowtail sub-ACL has been exceeded based on projections of total yellowtail catch on scalloped vessels. And I believe this is how it works in the groundfish plan, that things are based on projections of things being exceeded. After talking about this and thinking more about it in the office, mostly not with a lot of other PDT members, just we didn't have a lot of time, the next page, page 15, is actually what I think is the best foot forward with this stuff, which would actually be subsequent year, so it would be effective as soon as possible. And the part that's underlined is it would be similar to the one before, but let's just use 2011 as an example. After 2011 fishing year is over, this is the scallop fishing year, NIMS would determine if the yellowtail sub-ACL has been exceeded. We would be able to base it on final catch values. So in a similar way, you'd have to wait several months until after the fishing year is over, based on hopefully some new updates to the VMS reporting and projections of observer data. And the same time that the scallop PDT is determining whether the sub-ACLs for scallops are exceeded, we would also look at yellowtail at that same time and then tell the fleet mid-year if the yellowtail ACLs had been exceeded or not, basically. So it could be implemented, you know, in that fashion. You still have the same problems with the effectiveness of the closures in terms of when that would be, type of thing. So if it's not right at the beginning of the fishing year, you still have the idea of how long those things should be in place to still be effective. But I think this second year is preferable to the first year or in season. The Derby effects of an in-season AM would be potentially very large, and I don't even know how much that would benefit yellowtail, because as it's been discussed, is people would then potentially fish there first in the threat of it closing, and then you may have more impacts on yellowtail than you normally even would have from before. So long story short, these are some ideas about how to maybe clarify the timing and how it would work. The part that is not in stone, which I think is maybe better, so there's some flexibility between the groundfish and scallop PDT, is when we look at this stuff in that mid-year, that's when we would have to propose to you the part that's underlined in the middle of page 15. Basically, at some point, the start of the scallop PDT will work with the groundfish PDT to determine how long the seasonal closure should be for that year to address that projected overage from 2011. So we would be given the time and flexibility to be able to tell you which months would be the most effective. We don't have the data that it comes down to, that we don't have the data we need by month, by statistical area, to really do this. It should get better with better reporting, and hopefully between the PDTs we could provide the length of time that you would need to basically maximize the scallop catch and maximize the yellowtail benefits. But those exact months and everything we just can't give you without knowing how much the overage is. So while this is not perfect and it probably still has some distributional impacts people are uncomfortable with, and it's not 100% effective in terms of every last yellowtail poundage, probably it is the best one in the document. It is the preferred alternative from the different groups and the public input that we got. And until we get the data that we would really need to pick smaller areas like people want, to have them more reactive and have them more, linked to the benefits for yellowtail and scallops, it's probably a step in the right direction. We already know there's RSA programs looking at this. SMAS is doing stuff, so it's probably the best that we can offer at this point with those clarities about timing and everything.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Dave, can you put the motion on the board?
Well, before I do that, I need to make sure I understand what Deidre just said. I think you said that once the committee's motion is on the board, we could move to amend it by including the language on page 15 of the document you just referenced, all the underlined language that says after the 2011 fishing year is over. That's under year three, yellowtail flounder AMs, and that if we were to do that, it's the best thing that we can do, and it's something that you have, this a strategy you have discussed with Tom, and the collective wisdom says that is the best alternative to pursue as a little bit of explanation to go along with the motion I'm about to make. Is that, did I correctly state that?
I think so. You just made, after that, have to revisit the monitoring. It's not specified. We're still waiting to hear the page before, page 13, exactly what we should write in there for monitoring. Once you know what your AM is, you'll have to then have a motion about how to monitor it and what you need.
Okay, so then the next step would be for me to make the motion. All right, then I would move on behalf of the committee that option B, move to identify option B in section 3.2.3.11.2.1.1 as the preferred alternative for the yellowtail flounder AMs requiring a seasonal closure of a portion of the yellowtail flounder stock area pre-identified as having high bycatch, effective in year three. So that is the committee's motion, Mr. Chairman. And I would suggest that the council consider the approach that was just offered up by Deidre, and I believe Tom was well relative to that language underscored on page 15.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A quick question. I was not present at the discussion at the committee meeting, and I just want to make sure I've got this right because it is convoluted. When we're talking about a portion of the stock area, I'm looking at the map, and you're not closing the entire southern New England yellowtail stock area or a major portion of it would be a real hardship on the general category vessels from southern New England. And I'm curious when it's I just lost it. A portion, like the seasonal closure of a portion of the yellowtail stock area. How big a portion do you envision?
Yeah, this has been confusing for a lot of people. You're not alone. So the entire southern New England mid-Atlantic region is huge. And the pre-identified region, because we were told we have to identify those now so that people know and it's got to be an amendment, is those three entire statistical areas. That's the portion of the much larger southern New England mid-Atlantic stock area. So all three of those areas are included. Table 2 of Document 11 is a ranking of the DK ratios by statistical area for each of the regions. And those three statistical areas, when they're combined, comprise about 27% of all yellowtail caught and only 7% of scallops caught. So that's why it was highlighted as an area that you'd get your most bang for yellowtail savings at the least cost for scallops. Overall, not general category versus limited access.
Okay, but they are lumped together. So 539, 537, and 613 would all be closed under this scenario, and would be closed to general category as well as to...
Yes, if triggered, it's for both fleets taken together. They've been found to have similar bycatch rates, and it would close for whatever length of time is determined to address that overage.
The problem I have with that is that you would be taking boats in the 40 to 50 foot category and forcing them to go down to Hudson Canyon. I find that to be unacceptable, actually.
All right, well, this is not a motion from the committee, but I would move to amend the motion. Do you have a suggestion, Mr. Chairman?
I'm just curious, do we actually have to amend the motion with that language, or?
Well, if no one objects to the addition of that language, I suppose it could be done by consensus, but.
No, I guess my point was, I was conferring with the vice chair. I'll let him describe it. We have the same question.
I think that the explanation that we got on this was excellent. It seems to me that this language doesn't necessarily do anything to change the intent and impact of the motion itself. It's describing essentially, I want to say, the implementation process of how it would be put together in terms of the putting it into a regulation. So
yeah, and the main thing is it's a year sooner.
Excuse me?
It's a year sooner, year two.
Okay.
Would be.
So you're suggesting then that the motion can stand as is, and there would just be an understanding that the means by which we would implement this, carry it out, the process is described on page 15, the underscored text, year three, yellow to Flanda AMs. I'm still a bit confused, Deirdre. I'm sorry that you just mentioned year two.
All right,
so.
You know what? We're going to take a 10-minute break. And my intent is to come back and drive for another hour or so. And our first agenda item tomorrow has been canceled, so if we have to, we're going to bleed over into tomorrow. I'm going to tell you, we don't do a good job once we get past 7 o'clock. I understand there are people that may not be here tomorrow that were here for scallops, but I'm not going to finalize an amendment at 8 o'clock at night. I've heard from too many of the council members they can't think or do a good job past 7 o'clock. So that's where we're at. 10-minute. Okay, there was a significant, I don't even want to call it a sidebar. It seemed like just about everybody was there. And I think either Dr. Pierce or Deirdre is going to just explain to the council on the record why we're going to entertain a recommendation to table this motion till tomorrow. There's some work that needs to be done. Maybe David can just briefly touch on that.
Well, it became clear from our get-together that we are not going to be able to provide the council with a suggested revised approach that we could act upon tonight. It's clear from the exchange we had amongst ourselves that there'll be a need for Deirdre, for Tom, for some National Marine Fisheries Service staff to think about this a little bit more and to offer up an alternative tomorrow that likely will be crude because of a lack of information, a lack of data. Nevertheless, something that may at least serve the purpose. But I'll turn to Deirdre and to Tom for their interpretation of what we might expect tomorrow.
Who wants it?
Tom. So, I guess what we're going to try and do is there were concerns expressed during the break that there are not enough details on the timing of the closure, the timing of the seasonal closure, what metrics will be used to determine whether the closure is in place, and those details. And so what the chair of the committee asked us to do was to try and put together at least an option overnight that lays out some details for the seasonal closure so that people would know and the service would know what triggers it, what the metric is, and if they go over with the yellowtail bycatch, you know, when it will be closed and for how long it will be closed in a particular area. The concept, I think, is maybe further developed a little bit, and we'll see how this goes overnight. It may be different tomorrow. So, for example, it may be somewhat similar to groundfish AMs, where at least the start of the closure is based on some projections of yellowtail bycatch in year one. Late in the year, we figure out whether we're going to need to have a closure, and then it gets triggered, and then perhaps it gets refined later as the rest of the landings and catch data comes in. But we'll have those details at least outlined for you for tomorrow morning to consider and to show the service so that the service can see if that's acceptable to them.
In addition, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest to council members, especially those who have expressed some concerns about the area that's being looked at, that you give some thought into how you might like to see that modified. Try to get creative in the evening, recognizing this is not, again, it's a tough nut to crack. But we'll at least have, hopefully, something presented to us by Tom and company that will deal with the points Tom just outlined.
Okay, so just so everybody knows, my game plan, the lights shut off on the meeting for the day at 7 o'clock. We're going to go about one more hour, and that's it. Wherever we are, we are. We'll pick up tomorrow at 8:30 because the grouper, I'm not used to saying that, grouper and red snapper presentation isn't going to happen. So I know you're all disappointed, but so we're going to go for another, we'll go to 7 o'clock by my watch, and then we'll pick up what's left tomorrow at 8:30. My watch now says 6:58. So, okay, so I'll entertain a motion to table until tomorrow. Made by Rip, seconded by Dave Preble. All those in favor, raise your hand. Okay.
All right. The next set of committee recommendations can be found on page 14. At least they begin on page 14. Measures to adjust specific aspects of the FNP, make the program more effective. The next decision relates to overfishing, and I'll turn to Deirdre for that part of her presentation that deals with this particular decision.
Thank you. I'm going to go back to the presentation, starting with slide 24. There are five separate, what we're calling other issues, to adjust the FMP to make it more effective. The first one is consider revising the overfishing definition. This was an overall alternative in the document. There is a sub-motion you should be aware of based on the results of SAW 50 that were presented this morning, as well as endorsed by the SSC. This amendment will also update the reference points as they've been approved by the SARC and the SSC, so we will need to do that as well. The second one are several adjustments to the limited access general category program that were primarily raised from individual and group ideas, things that could make the IFQ program work better. The EFH closed areas, there was an alternative to address the fact that there are two sets of EFH closures in the scallop fishery, and this amendment considered changing those to be consistent with just the Amendment 13 EFH closures. There were a bunch of improvements about the research set-aside program to make it more timely and effective, about a dozen alternatives there. And then lastly, again, considering changing the scallop fishing year from March 1 to May 1. The council did not originally identify any preferred alternatives for these except the EFH issue, so that the preferred alternative was, in fact, to modify those boundaries to be consistent with the ones implemented under the multi-species plan. So I'll just do overfishing definition, I guess, and then take a break. There are three alternatives in the document: the no-action option, the Amendment 10 definition that has been slightly modified since then, as well as the hybrid definition. Very briefly, so people know the major differences. Under no action, we work on an area averaged F. So an overall F is set for the entire fishery, including closed areas, access areas, and open areas. They're averaged all over space, and then an overall F threshold and F target are set for the fishery. This, as we've noticed and recognized several times over the last few years, the fact that there's a lot of unfished biomass in these closures, including the habitat closures and closures in the scallop access area program, and the fact that we have these variable Fs in all these different areas, long-term has been leading to growth overfishing in open areas because we have to compensate for the fact that there's a lot of scallops that are off the table in terms of being exploited. So we've been setting F much higher than it should be in open areas to compensate for that. F over the last 5 years has been about 0.5 in open areas, and that's really been leading to growth overfishing in those areas. This, in particular, has not been going well in recent years because there's been so much of the biomass in closures, including elephant trunk, for example. The more spatially ununiform the fishery is, the more scallops that are locked up in closures, the worse the current definition functions. With time, the more areas that open, the more EFH boundaries, for example, that get off of the table, the more in line these things will become. But currently, it's not preventing growth overfishing currently. So Amendment 10 definition is a time-averaged approach, and the hybrid is just a little tweak of that, if you will, based on some SSC comments we got on these things originally when we brought them to the SSC a couple years ago now. Very quickly, it's more of a time-averaged approach, so that for the access areas, you take an individual F for the different areas, and then you combine that with a set F in your open areas, rather than right now we're compensating the F for open areas, whereas under the hybrid definition you would have a kind of F at the cap, at the maximum cap level. So the big difference is it's a systematic way for us to set F target, which has been a chronic problem in this council. We have to fight about it every time that there's a framework. What should the F target be? This system would set the F target for us at the level that we have in the ACL flowchart, and it would be a systematic way to do that. We would still have the same overfishing threshold that we have now, so that wouldn't change. That was something that was important to people and why the hybrid definition was more favored over the Amendment 10 definition. Long-term, it should maximize yield and flexibility and so forth. I won't go through all the impacts. Just want to make sure people understood the difference between the alternatives. The advisors reviewed this information, and they actually support no action for the overfishing definition. The committee the next day reviewed that, as well as had a little bit longer of a discussion about the spatial issues in the fishery, and actually are recommending a different alternative, as their preferred is the hybrid definition that was developed by the PDT. And also, I skipped over the PDT and SSC do support time average as being a better fit with area rotation and preferred for this decision. So that's all for the overfishing definition. And then after that, just remember, we do want to officially update the reference points. There is a committee motion previously from our meeting earlier in the month to do that. That would basically be from what Dr. Weinberg presented this morning. We want to update the F max to an FMSY for this fishery compared to FMAX.
All right, Mr. Chairman. This was a rather easy decision for the committee in light of the fact that the plan development team and the SSC did favor this particular, well, actually, the, yeah, they favored the, the plan development team went with the hybrid preferred. They preferred the hybrid, and the SSC endorsed the time-averaged approach. We decided to go with the plan development team perspective, which is the hybrid definition. So I would move on behalf of the committee that the council adopt option 3.4.1.3 as the preferred hybrid overfishing definition.
Questions, clarification on the motion? Go to the audience. Ron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. We support the hybrid option. We have concerns, and our fear was that it's not really a scientific concept when we talk about overfishing definition. It's a legal construct, and we just have fear that people will start subdividing the fishery and say this particular area is overfished and this isn't. For example, Dietrich just talked about the open area had growth overfishing. The advisors just don't think that's true when they're landing U-10s and 1020s. So that's a part of the data disconnect and just why there's concern about anything that constrains the council's flexibility in making decisions. Hopefully, we're going to get better data as time goes on, and this would be an intelligent approach. But just be aware why there's interest in a no-action alternative. We do have some different notions of what's going on out there. Thank you.
Jim?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. Actually, I prefer the no alternative option, alternative in this option, and let me explain why. While it's true that we're using both the resource from within the closed access areas and the open areas, and the claim that overfishing is occurring within the open areas, I find that a little bit hard to understand, particularly in light of the fact that the LPUE that's currently coming in from the open areas is much higher than expected and much higher than can be understood and explained. Probably the most likely reason for that is it's not as well surveyed as needs be. So therefore, the overall resource within that area has to be much higher, because if my understanding is correct, the LPUE is approximately twice as high as what was expected. And the age and size makeup of that biomass but also cause a question as to, you know, what we're seeing there and why we're actually seeing it, if the reverse was true, if the F was, what, 0.5, is it? It just doesn't seem to make anything understandable if you look at it in that context. So we're hoping, many of us are hoping anyways, that we'll be able to expand the survey areas and get a better understanding of what's out there before we change off to no action. It's not that we're opposed to the hybrid, but it's a case of why don't we learn what we're working with first before we make any more changes. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. We're on the council. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I did offer the motion in committee and would to speak to it. I think the, you know, as Deirdre points out, right now the status quo assumes that F is spatially uniform, and that's clearly not the case. And I think this is the better fit for our current management strategy. I think in the long term it would do a better job of optimizing yield. And some of the concerns we heard also during this discussion were that eventually some of the current closed areas might become open and that resource might be available and to the fishery, and that would even things out. But I would point out that the hybrid option is also robust to that outcome. In other words, if in fact some of the boundaries change and more resource becomes available, that would in fact flow through to the fishery through this definition. And I think it's a better long-term fit. It would probably do a better job of optimizing yield in the long run. And I think it's more defensible relative to how we're managing the resource. And I share the concerns about the need to better understand open area abundance. I think that's going to be an overarching concern, regardless of which definition we choose. But I think this is the better fit.
Thanks, Rick. Anyone else in the council? I'm ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. Dave?
Yeah, Deidre mentioned during your presentation that the committee had a consensus decision back at the beginning of September relative to updating the overfishing definition reference points. So I will make a motion that is consistent with that particular consensus position. I would move the council update the overfishing definition reference point by adopting FMSY, the reference point developed at SAW 50 during the Sea Scallop benchmark assessment. Is that captured, Deirdre? council update the overfishing definition reference point. By adopting FMSY, Deidre's helping me out here, and BMSY instead of their proxies, FMAX and BMAX. Well, hold on a second. Let's back up. Where did that language come from? Are you telling me that was the language used as part of the consensus?
Yeah, in the decision document on page 14, the September 7th by consensus committee motion is the one, it's not exactly what you're reading from. I'm not sure what you're reading from.
All right, strike that. I apologize.
It's the same idea, but just
same thing, right, but let's follow that exact language. I missed that language, which is why I was making the motion that I did. So with your permission, Mr. Chairman, I will make the motion that is on the screen, that the committee supports modifying the current reference points in the overfishing definition to reflect the results from SAW 50, specifically BMAX, biomass, maximum biomass, and FMAX replaced with BMSY and FMSY.
Just so I'm clear, is this the motion the committee passed, or is this a little different?
It was a consensus position. This is the language, apparently, that was used to develop that consensus position, captured by Deirdre. Therefore, that is it.
I'll just ask for a second, just so we can have it clean. Rip Cunningham? Okay. So Rip's going to second this. I assume. So Dr. Pierce, maker, Rip, seconder. Questions of clarification from the council? Go to the audience. Back to the council. Everybody read it? Okay, ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. And Karen, just for the record, the previous vote was 17, not 16. Thank you. Dr. Pierce.
All right. Deirdre, do you have some additional presentation relative to, once again, the minor improvements to the limited access general category program? And this one is decision 18. I'm sorry, it's decision 18A, but it's motion 20, shown on page 15 of the decision document.
Okay, we can get into these one at a time. I'll just explain the first one now and the others later. There are five different general category specific issues that were considered in this amendment. The first one would be to allow general category IFQ permit owners to roll over up to 15% of their quota from that fishing year to the following fishing year. So this basically was the only alternative. It was no action or this considered. And the advisors discussed this. The motion's on the screen now. They do support allowing a 15% rollover. And the committee discussed this a little bit the next day, too, and ultimately also support 15% rollover for general category vessels to go to the next year. And the vote was 6-0-1. The summary of the analyses are in the decision document, and some input from the public in the other documents.
All right, so I would move on behalf of the committee, allow a rollover of up to 15% of the annual quota for the limited access general category vessels. Alternative 3.4.2.1.2 clarify that 15% refers to a vessel's original allocation for that year, not including any leased quota.
Questions of clarification? Sally?
Two questions. What was the committee discussion with respect to how this might affect the cap, the 2% cap that exists, or even a cap that might be modified by Amendment 15? And why was, in fact, this set at a relatively high level when it looks like the service was suggesting that a lower level might be more appropriate?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to punt on that one and turn to Rick Robbins, who was the maker of the motion. If you would, Rick, could you elaborate as to the rationale for your motion?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think we went around and around on this because we considered an alternative that would have been done in pounds, and then we looked at the distribution of catch or distribution of allocations, and in fact that poundage would have been much higher than a lot of the allocations are, and so we came back to the percentage and settled on that. But I think one of the points during the discussion was that in fact there is full accountability for each of these because it is managed on an IFQ basis, so even though there would be carryover, the actual catch in terms of the overall ACL as it's being allocated out is being done on an ITQ basis, and so there's total precision of managing that catch. And Deirdre, if you have any additional recollection from the committee discussion, it may be helpful, but that's what I recall.
Yeah, the only other thing I would add is that originally the committee was trying to mirror the limited access carryover, 10-day at sea, and then we realized that it's really not the same rationale, that it's to allow for one trip at the end of the year to be carried over, which is what we learned was the rationale for the 10-day at sea carryover. But instead, 15% is closer to a general, other IFQ programs managed in the world are closer to that percentage.
Pat?
Yeah, we continue to believe that 15% is too high, unnecessarily high. When you look at the stated reason for this, then 15%, especially when you're looking at some individuals' quotas, is a lot of fish. I don't see the need for it.
Any more questions or clarification? Go to the audience. Jeff Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jeff Kalin, Lawrence Fisher. I just wanted to point out, Mr. Chairman, that based on the earlier vote on lease quota, that last sentence probably isn't necessary after clarification. That's the only thing. I'm still pretty sharp for it being almost 7, but. So what do you need that for? Why do you need that?
They're general category vessels. They are allowed to lease.
Oh, they can lease. I'm sorry. Okay. Hey, I'm just trying to have a little levity for late in the afternoon, Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it sharped yourself.
Not as sharp as I think.
It's getting late, Jeff. That's why I won't let it go past 7.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Anyone else? Tom?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do support this motion. We think it's an absolutely vital part of an IFQ program to be viable, to be able to roll over quota at the end of the year if you blow an engine or you have a bad, bad weather over the winter when you expected to fish some of those trips. We think the 15% is appropriate. we think it's an important motion for the council to pass. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Thank you. Mike Marchetti, Eastern New England Scallop Association and advisor. I agree with everything Tom just said. It's a straight numbers game and straightforward. We discussed it at length at the advisory panel as well as the committee level. Again, I think it's a straight numbers game. I view fishery, should be no uncertainty, and it's a good safety in case somebody has problems late season or whenever. I agree with the motion.
Thanks. Jen?
Given that the limited access fleet is allowed to carry over 10 days or basically one trip, which might work out to a somewhat similar amount on this, I don't see any reason to oppose it. But I don't think there's a clear understanding. If I recall correctly, the limited access fleet can carry over 10 days, but it's not something that can accumulate. If you have, say, 70 days fishing this year and you carry 10 over and you don't use them, you can't carry 10% of that 80 days over the next year. So it would be a one-year deal, reverting back to your original quota in this case. So you wouldn't keep accumulating each year you don't use it. So it's not like building up a huge bank account. That'd be the only caveat that I would ask be expressed in this motion. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Council, anything from the council on this motion? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. So I have, what do I have? 16. Opposed? 1. Motion carries 16-1. David.
Okay, next is decision 18B, modification of the limited access general category possession limit.
Okay, very briefly, it's really just the next slide. It has to do with three alternatives and the request. We have the no action, of course, which is 400 pounds per day that the quota vessels can land. There's another alternative, which is up to 1,000, so that is a little more encompassing. It could be any amount between 400 and 1,000. Or the final alternative would be no limit at all, and you'd basically eliminate the possession limit for general category quota vessels. The advisors discussed this for a very long time, a lot of mixed input, concerns about unintended consequences of increasing this possession limit, and making it too attractive for other investors and changing the nature of the fishery, but more compelling arguments which ultimately affected the vote on the side of efficiency. Fuel prices could increase very rapidly and making 400 pounds not efficient for business or profit. So 600 pounds was a compromise, if you will, of a balance between providing that increased efficiency with the not going too high, that it would change anything too dramatically. Committee reviewed this and agreed. So their preferred motion was also for 600 pounds.
I would move on behalf of the committee, modify the general category possession limit to 600 pounds.
Questions, clarification? Frank?
Yeah, my question would be, was there any discussion on what increasing this would do to the yellowtail bycatch? Is it a good thing or a bad thing in regards to the yellowtail?
I don't believe there was any discussion relative to yellowtail. Deirdre, do you recall any? Committee members, do you remember our touching on that issue? I don't think so.
No, I mean, nothing specific. The idea would be there would be less steaming time. It was more of a cost savings event. If they still have the same amount of pounds that they'll be landing, the same amount of fishing, just less steaming.
Questions of clarification? Clarification? Dave? Clarification? Okay, I'm going to go to the audience before I ask the council for debate. Any questions of clarification? Okay, I'll go to the audience. Maggie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have my correspondence in which, you know, the position of Associated Fisheries of Maine is that with an ITQ there should be no possession limit at all. They should be able to fish the allocation in the most efficient manner as possible. You've had people come to you many times at the meetings and complain about how they only have 3 or 4 days worth of allocation, and, you know, and my thought is always, why would you hobble them to make them catch it in 4 days when they could catch it in one? But I understand that the advisors and the committee came to this compromise. I think it's certainly better than the alternative, which would be, you know, status quo. And hopefully we will at some point, you know, get this to some more level that's more appropriate, I think, for an ITQ, which is no possession limit at all. So reluctantly would support this this option because it's really makes no sense at all to keep them at the 400-pound level. Thank you.
Jim Lovgren.
Jim Lovgren, Fisherman's Dock Cooperative in Point Pleasant, representing the Fisherman's Dock Co-op members of 12 owner-operators. I won't say they're all in favor of this or opposed to this. A couple of people could benefit, but majority-wise, we're very opposed to increasing this trip limit to 600 pounds. This fishery has operated as a 400-pound fishery for 18 years, and frankly, the only problem it had was that it was too successful and drew everybody into it. All of our members are original scallop permit holders going back to the late 70s when they first created it, okay? As I said earlier, a few of them got part-time days at sea. The rest of us got the general category permit, which some of us used and some didn't because we were fishing in other fisheries. To look at this fishery based on 400 pounds, okay, and then to have it not even before the ink is dried, these people, and they're the lucky ones who just happen to fit in that time frame, okay, to have them really, I mean, the audacity to come here and say, hey, now that it's an ITQ, why don't you just let me fish it all at once? It won't affect anything. It'll make my business more effective. Well, what are they going to do after they catch their quota? They're taking away my ability to make a living. They are impacting me economically. This wasn't analyzed, okay, to after all comments and so forth were in. The economic impact on other fisheries regarding this. And what that amounts to is an example of a boat with 40,000 pounds of quota allocated to them presently has to spend 100 days fishing to catch that amount of scallops. Under 600 pounds, he only has to spend 66 days fishing to catch that quota, which means there's 34 days more in a year he can go catch my fluke, my sea bass, my whatever, squid, white, and butterfly, whatever it is. He will be in my fisheries picking my pocket again. And I'm sorry, it's not just me. It's many fishermen. This is, it's so self-serving, it's just blows my mind. I can understand him wanting to be more efficient, and I will make a alternative here. You want to pass a 600-pound trip limit, provide that vessel that wants to land between 400 and 600 pounds has to have a 24-hour layover in between trips, and that would basically take up for the time that he wouldn't. Because when our guys, when they fish 400 pounds, boy, they'll go 7 to 14 days at a time. Day after day after day, you know. If it's up to 600 pounds, they won't be able to do it because they got to spend maybe another 3 hours shucking each day, okay? But require them, if this is an option, I mean, like, if they're not basically greedy and saying, I want to not just catch my quota efficiently and not spend so much fuel, okay, my alternative is to catch more fish of other people, okay, get into other fisheries while, you know, if That's it. Just a matter of efficiency. They should have no problem with a 24-hour layover. Okay, so that's basically my comments on that issue there. I just, as someone who's basically been allocated 1,800 pounds, you know, because I wasn't lucky, and I can tell you I've worked 60, 70 days a year scalloping recently and had that taken away, and that's only because I had my blackback flounder fishery taken away from me. And that's about half a dozen people at our dock. You know, and that's Belford, same thing, in New Jersey. Now, the scallop resource off of New Jersey for scallop day fishermen is an hour and a half to 2 hours away from the dock. It's not long to steam. They're not steaming long, okay? They can catch that 600 pounds in 12 hours dock to dock. They'll just go back to back to back till that quota's used up and be in other fisheries there. And like I say, there is a solution to this. Require a 24-hour layover, all right? Thanks for your consideration.
Mr. Hatch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gary Hatch, advisor, Maine. We at Eastern New England Fisheries Scallop Association, we object to this because I look at it as the ramifications to do this would far outweigh any good. The category of general category, whether it's ITQ or whatever, was focused around the small boats, and I think every time that we make an adjustment like this, you know, we're taking that element away. We have our thoughts on why we're in this mess to begin with, which never did get addressed, which is a 7230 line, and the inefficiency that's built into the east of it, and the amount of fishing pressure that's guaranteed to the west of it. The other point would be is in the closed areas, you're going to give an inequity to the boats west of it because they all fish two drags, typically bigger boats, and they're going to be able to get their 600 pounds quicker every day, where the boats with the 8 or 10 foot drags is a general category was supposed to have been. It will take them a full day at best to get their fishery. And another question that I do have is if we're going to up the general category possession limit for the limited access boats, will that mean that we take the 200-pound possession limit in the Gulf of Maine to 400 pounds? Thank you.
Jim? Jim Kendall?
I keep coming to the well on these issues, and really I don't have that much involved except that I have had a strong background in a lot of these fisheries, and I'd like to offer up my opinion on it. But I think Gary has touched on one issue that you've got a real divide between some of these guys within the same fishery. This isn't limited access versus general category. This is general category for different reasons. Now, you might say, all right, it's the guy from Maine versus the guy from Cape May. But you also got Jim Lovegren down there causing you to say, why does he find a difference? What it basically boils down to is the guy's going to be able to take in 2 days what it normally would take him 3 trips to accomplish. And I shouldn't say days, I should say trips. And unless you do something like Jim suggested by putting a layover time involved, he is going to cut down on his amount of fishing time that's required to land the scallops, and then he's going to look around for his next opportunity. And then the next opportunity is going to come at the cost of someone, very possibly someone who was trying to go general category scalloping and didn't have the history to remain in it or had so little that it was worthless, and he ended up leasing it out and sees himself as a loser in the game. I had said this before, and, you know, we've adjusted several things for the general category because we felt that they were small boats. They were set upon for various reasons or at a disadvantage. because of certain things occurring for them. But basically, this fishery started in Maine, inshore, worked around for a few handful of boats that grew up to one time to be maybe a couple of thousand guys trying to dip in all at the same time, and you come up with more boats in the general category fleet now than you have limited access boats. And now you're going to take and you're going to reconstruct or reconfigure this fishery once again, and we'll be back at the table until we get to a point where you have a handful of people looking to consolidate the fishery into other hands. Now, there are people, and one of the guys told me today that he bought up some leased resource and is earning $77,000 a year on that leased resource. Are you going to aid and abet that type? Because you're going to be looking at the stockbrokers before you'll be looking at fishermen the next time around. So I would ask that you stay with the 400-pound and defeat this motion. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Bob Maxwell, West Creek, New Jersey. I'm general category. Thanks for the opportunity to be here and talk in reference to this increase of 600 pounds, which I think is more than fair under the circumstance. We have an IFQ fishery. Most IFQ fisheries are wide open. The participants that are within that fishery are allowed to utilize that quota that they possess how they feel fit. If they want to utilize 100 pounds for today, or they want to utilize 10,000 pounds for today. We're being kind of restrictive on what we would like to do. We're being real reserved, asking for 600 pound limit. I hear the other people here tonight that are speaking and saying that if we get 600-pound limit increase, that it's going to allow us to affect other fisheries. This fishery has always revolved around the participants that are in it in other fisheries. That hasn't changed. It has been a small boat fishery, and the IFQ fishery is changing that component. It's basically we're going from the historical general category fishery to a quota managed fishery. And for some individuals, I think that it's a hard swallow, but it's here and we're dealing with it, and we're taking little steps that are, I believe, that are going forward, and they're good for the industry, the participants that are in the fishery. And I just hope that the council and the committee can look forward on this and adopt the 600-pound limit. And I thank you for your time.
Okay, back to the council. I was going to go back to the council, but Ted, you want to weigh in on this?
Ted Platts, Newport, Rhode Island. I'm a monk fisherman. I'm not in the scallop fishery, so I'm not going to weigh in on the various weights. Just one thing that didn't get discussed or considered here is the potential for gear conflict, as the general category scallop fleet is allowed to fish a little more effectively or efficiently. You do reduce the likelihood of gear conflict. We monk fishermen tend to have a history of gear conflict. We fish the same areas. That's a potential benefit. I'm not going to jump in on the argument. It's not my fishery, but that point was not brought up, and I think it's worth making. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The comments and rationale just provided by Gary and both Jims echo a number of calls I've received over the last week. And they kind of underscore the primary concern that we're further moving away from the small boat, day boat fishery that we tried to maintain in Amendment 11. So I'm going to make a motion to substitute, and that's to substitute the no action alternative 3.4.2.2.1.
Is there a second? Seconded by Jim Fair. Discussion on the motion to substitute. No action. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would oppose the motion to substitute. Partially, I agree with Maggie that an ITQ fishery, in an ITQ fishery, a daily trip limit is inappropriate. But in this particular case, it's not completely inappropriate, because there are a number of perfectly legitimate reasons why the general category people want to maintain a trip limit. What I'm concerned about is that if we are going to start closing areas for yellowtail, then we will be impacting disproportionately at least the southern New England boats that are restricted to 400 pounds, because even if they are willing to make a long journey to avoid the closure area, they won't have enough quota to make the day. So the 600 pounds seems to be a balance point where that's enough so that if a guy has to go a considerable distance to avoid a yellowtail closure, then at least he can make the day. So I support the 600 pounds, and I will vote against this.
On the motion to substitute, anyone else on the council? You ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. I see five in favor. Opposed? Oh, 11 opposed. Any abstentions? One abstention. Motion to substitute fails. 5-11 with one abstention. We're back on the main motion. Anything further? Anything further from the council? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand. We got 14 opposed. We got 2 opposed and 1 abstention. Motion carries 14-2, 1 abstention. Dave, what's the next one before we actually put the motion up? Was the next one the?
It's the 18C, raise the maximum quota. One LAG vessel can fish to 2.5%. Page 16.
You think that'll take more than 14 minutes?
I don't dare predict. I mean, you provide, as you must, a good opportunity for public comment, so it could go 20 minutes.
That puts us past the 7 o'clock hour. I think we can just cut it off today, right here, right now, and we'll be back here tomorrow morning at 8:30 to pick up where we left off. Thank you.